shall we? Two things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the movie.
Yeah.
And let's never reference anything we've just said, because that was all Patreon exclusive and the callbacks won't work if we reference it again.
I've got no fucking clue what was what. No clue what was what. And I'm editing this week as well, yeah. So this is going to be sick.
Who are you?
I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm struggling to figure out how to put my phone on silent, but other than that, I'm doing really well. Just turn off.
God, you just can't get the start. It's like,
I don't know if that's on. It might go off. It might
you
not.
Work in I a cinema. Care. You should have this. You should have this down.
No, I just don't have my phone on. I don't pay attention to this ever. Right, the only reason that I ever pay attention to this is if you message,
yeah.
Or if someone at work goes, did this get done yesterday? And I'll be like, oh, yeah, yeah, Sam. Or Letterboxd, because I've got Letterboxd downloaded now.
You've fallen in love with Letterboxd.
I've got Letterboxd downloaded now.
See, I've never touched the stuff, and we just had a brief conversation before the episode, which is available on Patreon. If you're not on Patreon, the episodes are longer, they're better, they're unedited, it's pure chaos. It starts at around £1.50, £2.
It depends where you're listening. I fucking hate Patreon at the minute. But it was a quid.
We were just talking about Letterboxd and some of your strong opinions on my movie taste. And I think what I might do is get a Letterboxd account just so I can review the same films you have.
Yeah, let's do that.
But the opposite.
That'd be sick. Let's do that.
All right, let's do it. We should probably do the films we cover on the show as well.
Yeah.
Might be a good promo
that's,
thing.
That's fine. Yeah. But then we do that here. Yeah. We're just doubling up then.
We are doubling up.
You know what I mean? Let Letterboxd be free. Let's just watch some weird shit. I watched 12 Angry Men this morning.
Great film.
1957.
Great
fucking
film.
Awesome. Blew my mind. I had no clue what was coming. Never seen it before. I was like, this is just a bunch of blokes in a fucking room. And then 10 minutes in, I'm like, let the man speak. Let the man speak.
It's one of those films I watched when I was a kid and I just never revisited, because I'm like, that's a brilliant film. Like Rear Window. I'm like, that's a brilliant film.
Yeah.
And then every time someone says you watch it, I'm like, no, I know it's brilliant. And then it comes on TV and I'm like, fucking hell, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's insane. The weirdest thing, 1957, I was like, how is every frame of this movie a poster?
It's brilliant.
Every single frame is gorgeous. Like, I would happily let any single person hit pause at any point in that film, I'd put it on my wall immediately. I'd be like, that's an A3 poster.
It's the sort of artistry that can only come about when film costs more than a child's education per frame.
Yeah.
And you're like, got to get it right, cunt, because we're not reshooting.
We also can't check it. So if it's wrong, guess who's getting fired?
Right, because we'll find out in 4 days when it's back from the lab.
Yeah.
Right, shall we talk about what we're getting into this week?
We're going to be getting into, who is Mike Flanagan and why should we care?
The beauty of maths.
What's really in the attic?
Beautiful details that are very easy to miss. In the film? In life? Yes. To both.
Yes. Why this might be the perfect film.
And finally,
what does it mean?
What does it really mean?
What's it mean?
What's it really mean?
Should we probably mention the film that we're doing?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, if they in case a blind person who...
I'm sorry, what's your issue with blind people listening to stuff?
It's that their automatic reader would have already read what they were clicking on. Mm. They're not just clicking randomly on the internet.
We don't know this.
You think blind people just sit in front of a computer and go beep, boop, boop.
I think one might. And this one's for you, buddy. I'm going to die on this hill for you.
Okay. What film are we covering this week, Ben?
Life of Chuck?
The Life of Chuck.
No, I had a question mark on it. We are doing The Life of Chuck.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, I forgot.
You literally just watched it.
Sorry, the fucking revolutionary in me came out and I started fighting the man. Forgot what I was doing.
I'm doing this for blind people that don't have
a
translator.
I'm doing this for blind person just to prove this fucking argument wrong.
It made me tempted now to one day just sit at a computer, open the internet and just start clicking with my eyes closed to see where I end up.
See what happens?
Just let life take its...
Guaranteed it's porn. Guaranteed it's porn.
So you just finished watching Life of Chuck?
I've literally just finished it, yeah. I finished it maybe 2 hours ago.
What were you expecting the film to be?
Shit.
Really? Were you like not...
It was marketed terribly. The trailer is what it is. The main focus was fucking Tom Hiddleston dancing to a drum solo. And I'm like, that's pretty cool.
I agree.
Could not give less of a shit about it though.
I agree the marketing for this film was terrible.
Yeah. I also worked through when this was released in the cinema and people coming out were like, that's a weird film.
Right,
And someone compared it to Beau Is Afraid.
Oh,
in like the structure. And I was like,
are those the only two films they'd ever seen?
I don't know. Because when I was watching it, I was struggling to understand where the Beau is Afraid thing came from. But it did actively put me off watching it.
Yeah,
in the
as
cinema.
It would.
Because Beau is Afraid's great.
No, it's not.
But it's a mood. You have to be. It's Tool.
Beau, no, it's not.
It is Tool.
Tool's wonderful. Beau is
Tool
Afraid.
Are great.
Yeah,
but also, I can't come home from a long day at work and just put Tool on because that's exhausting.
I love it.
That's exhausting.
Beau is Afraid for me is, and I've said this on the show before, it's the movie-going equivalent of being stuck at the water cooler while a colleague tells you about a dream they had.
Yeah.
And the dream is 2 hours long.
Yeah, that's fine.
And then, and none of it connects. And you're like, why am I listening to this?
I quite like that, though.
Yeah, okay.
That gets my brain ticking over, and I'm just sort of like, you might be a mental.
right.
I want to dig in this well. I want to see how far this goes.
To compare this to Beau is Afraid is wild. That's like coming out of 13 Ghosts.
She was very clear on that the structure reminded her of Beau is Afraid, which I kind of get. I don't really.
No.
But I'm really trying to.
I think if you've seen two films and one is Life of Chuck and one is Beau is Afraid, it makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
It's like saying, coming out of 13 Ghosts and going, it's very reminiscent of Jaws.
I can kind of see that.
Of course you can.
Kind of see that.
Of course
that.
You can.
Think about it hard enough.
I agree with you. The marketing of this film was awful.
Yeah, I thought
having
it was
seen
shit.
It, can you see why?
Yeah,
how do you market this
you
film?
There is no physical way to go, hey, so this is the film that's coming out. Also, here's a spoiler-free way that we can tell you what it's about. There's no.
The less
nothing.
You know about this film, the better.
Yeah.
And for anyone who hasn't seen the film yet, we normally do a breakdown. I'm not going to do that this week. We'll see how the breakdown goes going forward. But this week specifically, I'm going to stop everyone here and say, this film is best experienced by watching it knowing nothing about it.
Hands down, look into it, zero, and just put it on. There is one thing that I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
It is the right film.
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 That's the only answer that you will ever need.
Yep.
It is the right film. That's
go
it.
Put it on. If you haven't, go put it on, come back. We're going to assume from this point on that you've seen the film where you don't care to.
Yeah, welcome back. Thanks for revisiting us.
Right.
After watching the film.
And because you've seen the film, we don't need to break it down because you already know what it is.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Mike Flanagan.
Okay, I'm in.
Where did you first become aware of Mike Flanagan? When did he enter your environment?
Today. So he entered my environment when the credits rolled and then his name came up at the end of the movie.
No,
but I don't think he was in it, right?
How dare you? You're aware of who Mike Flanagan is from before this though, right?
I'm not too sure, to be honest.
Really?
I'm not too sure.
Oh, buddy, you are. So I first became aware of Mike Flanagan with a movie called Hush.
Hush.
Little effective home invasion horror about a mute
the one
author.
About the fucking, yes.
Getting terrorized by a lost member of Anonymous.
It's fucking awful. It's fucking awful.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So this is where we get into Mike Flanagan, right?
I've just Googled Hush. This is the one that I'm thinking about.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
fucking
yeah.
terrible.
It's the Blue Man Group.
I hated every second of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's awful. I would say for a lot of people, and myself included,
yeah,
the first time I sort of started to care about Mike Flanagan was with a Netflix series called The Haunting of Hill House, which is mint.
Is that the one with the little girl that's like perfectly splendid?
No. That's the fucking diabolically bad Haunting of Bly Manor, which is the companion series that came out afterwards. And it's a real double-edged sword of a pairing because the first one, Haunting of Hill House, brilliant. Effectively scary, but also good drama.
Okay.
Haunting of Bly Manor, perfectly splendid.
I put and Bly Manor on, I was in for 15 minutes and I nearly killed myself.
Yeah, it's
perfectly
it's,
splendid.
It's irredeemably bad.
I couldn't even get through an episode.
Right, so where I would say he really got his dicks in a row was Midnight Mass.
Okay.
Which is a little Netflix horror series about a small American fishing village. Very tiny population, may or may not be a vampire.
Okay.
Fucking mint. You should absolutely watch it. And then he did Fall of the House of Usher. He's made these huge, massive horror series for Netflix, the vast majority of which, Bly Manor accepted, are some of the best horror that's on Netflix.
Okay.
He's made millions for him.
Incredible.
Growing up, he made little short films on his video camera and was a big Stephen King fan. That's going to be relevant, A, because The Life of Chuck is a Stephen King short story, but also because he adapted Gerald's Game.
I fucking love Gerald's Game.
Mike Flanagan directed.
Great movie.
Great movie.
Great movie.
Did it, wrote that first in college, and he also read Dr. Sleep.
Okay.
Which he'd go on to adapt.
Oh, sick, okay.
Okay, so I've not seen Dr. Sleep, and there's a reason I've not seen it. It's because people whose opinions I trust came out of the movie furious that they'd wasted their time watching it. They were like, that is the shittest horror film I've ever seen. It's my mum. My mum's normally mint with movies.
Okay. That's Adam. That's Ad's favourite film from Control Alt Critique.
Really?
Favourite horror movie, Dr. Sleep.
Ah.
I've never seen it. Because the people whose opinion I didn't trust before me and Adam loved it. Telling me to watch it constantly. And I'm like, I tolerate you at best.
Right. Yeah.
I don't fully trust.
Stop recommending a horror film starring Ewan McGregor. Yeah,
it's the same person that told me to watch Street Fighter unironically. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Okay. No.
That's the last recommendation I listened to.
It's funny how so much of your initial expectations of movies are set by who in your friends group that you respect either loves or hates movies.
I'm desperate to watch Dr. Sleep now that I know that it's Ad's favorite movie, because I trust Ad. I'm desperate to watch it now.
Same.
Previously, I was like, I'm not even going to entertain any of it. I couldn't be asked.
He's basically become, Mike Flanagan's basically become sort of regarded as the Stephen King guy when it comes to adaptations.
Okay.
He's currently got the rights to a Carrie TV series.
Okay.
He's been given the Exorcist franchise to reboot after the awful one recently.
Okay.
And he's also been poached from Netflix by Amazon.
Right.
With the exclusive rights to adapt the Dark Tower series by Stephen King.
That could be good.
So, like, he's going to be on a Stephen King adaptation 5 or 6 by the time we see his next movie.
Yeah, fair. Okay, cool.
But he's a massive, massive, massive fan.
Yeah.
He's like, Stephen King was his author.
Awesome.
He did ask Stephen King for the rights to this movie, and Stephen King said no.
Okay.
Because he'd just been given Dark Tower.
Right, yeah.
Did you see the film with Idris Elba, Matthew McConaughey?
No.
It was bad. No. It's a weird set of stories that many people kind of say is a bit unadaptable. It blends a lot of Stephen King's horror impulses with Stephen King's sci-fi impulses.
Right.
With Stephen King's obsession with like young adults learning how to be adults in that kind of Stranger Things way.
Twilight Zone.
It's very, very Twilight Zone,
yeah.
But it's also grand, epic, and like a serialized book series like Game of Thrones.
Right, okay.
And it just mixes one or too many. Like in a book, you can change tone, you can change genre, and it kind of works.
Okay.
On TV, like less so. And in film, hard. Definitely not.
Yeah.
And they tried to do a relatively faithful adaptation with Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey, and it was fucking shit.
Just give it Uwe Boll.
He'll do it so poorly that anything that follows
will be amazing.
Will be amazing by comparison.
This is what I mean. Let's just get Uwe Boll in as a reference point for everything. Get him to remake Game of Thrones season 8, and I guarantee it'll be sick. Just be mint.
Guarantee people will look at the existing season 8 and go, "Oh, actually,
do you know what I mean?"
On reflection,
there you go.
It's not a bad shout.
We could have had it worse.
It's not a bad shout. We were chatting. Last episode about this sort of current generation's obsession with something's either all bad or all good.
Yeah.
Uwe Boll is here to provide the reference to what all bad looks like.
I mean, you say that, but it's all fun.
There is that.
It's all fun.
There is that.
It's the weirdest adaptations to ever pick. I'm going to take a non-dialogue, non-plotline story from a video game in the late 80s that's still available on floppy disk. Let's make that a movie. What do you mean it's only going to be 45 minutes long? I'm going to drag it out for 3 hours, mate.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's mint. He's mint.
Which one was that?
Fucking any of them. Just throw a dart at his work and I'm guaranteed it'll hit one of them.
So after being turned down for adapting Life of Chuck, what I didn't realise is the collection of short stories that Life of Chuck is found in, I think it's called If It Bleeds, came out in 2020. So this is a recent Stephen King story.
Right, okay.
And I also didn't realise that all of his stories are submitted as manuscripts to a wide variety of filmmakers as the book is published.
Right, okay.
Because he's such a prolifically adapted author now and popular author that they're like, fuck it. Rather than waiting for anyone to ask, as the book comes out, we'll just send it to people we like already.
Yeah, yeah.
He said no, but the reason he said no is because he didn't want to stall the Dark Tower series. He's like, you've already got one of my projects, Flanagan. Yeah. Fuck thyself. Get that off the ground. Of course, it's the Dark Tower. It's unadaptable. It's hit a shitload of delays. We're not sure. And so Flanagan asked again, like, look, if that's not happening for a couple of years, can I do Life of Chuck? To which he replied, are you sure that's a strange one? And I think it's a fair point for Stephen King to point out that, like, oh, acclaimed horror director Mike Flanagan wants to do The Life of Chuck.
I think The Life of Chuck, there's a horror element to it. I don't think it's horrific.
No.
I think there is a horror element to it, and it's sort of like it's not an existential fear that we can sort of look at and grasp and do this, that, and the other. It takes a very delicate route to look at a deep-seated fear that every single human being shares.
100%.
Which I think is gorgeous.
Which brings me on to my question of, having now seen the film, mm-hmm. how do you feel about it?
Oh, incredible. If I'd have watched this before we did our last episode on the top 10 films of 2025, this would have been in it.
Same.
Like 1,000%. Because it's 100%. Fucking incredible.
Yeah.
I've never been so steadily and carefully walked through being built up and then broken and then broken and then broken and then broken and then weirdly built up but knowing that the cycle is just gonna be fucking god awful from there on out. It leaves you on, like, you know how it ends, you mm-hmm. know where it's going, but it leaves you on a weird hopeful thing, because it's not about the beginning or the end, it's the time that fills the gap. Mm-hmm. It's the gooch that's important.
Yeah, it is.
Which is wholly inspiring.
Mm.
It also gave me like a weird panic, because I keep getting headaches recently, and I'm like,
oh my god,
am I Chuck
am I unwell?
Well, I need to start looking in attics. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. But no, it's a fucking incredible film. The way that it plays out is insane. The start of the film pissed me off a bit.
Really?
Just because I knew nothing of this going in.
Yeah.
And it was annoying me, because I was like, I couldn't tell
how any of this had anything to do with Chuck.
I just couldn't tell what universe we were in.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know whether we were reality mm-hmm. adjacent, or whether we were witnessing like a visual metaphor, and I could not put my fucking finger on it for too long. And then when Matthew Lillard shows up, I'm like, oh, I think I get this.
What about Matthew Lillard made you think you got it?
So the way that he was, I've got no fucking clue what his job was. He just had high vis on and was sort of like, well, it's all, you know, it's a sinkhole, it's a maintenance thing, that's not on me. And I'm like, what the fuck is your, what does that mean?
He's the neighbor.
Yeah, but that's... But what?
Right.
Why are you like... So then it was, okay. But then he's talking to the school teacher.
He is, yes.
Who is the most logical. He sounds sort of like... He sound solid education. Everything is da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It has to make sense. Everything is rational. Mm-hmm. Ducks in a row. Everything like this. Those two conversing is like watching... a reactive, panicked puppy
mm-hmm.
and a fucking PhD Carl Sagan sit down and have a conversation. And when you're thinking, is this a visual metaphor for something?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the fucking reality adjacent universe thing? I started thinking, is this in someone's head? Is this sort of like a playback of events, or is it like a, I don't know, immune system is what I thought.
Right, okay.
Matthew Lillard trying to take control and be sort of like, that isn't my department. That isn't me, because, you know, I can't do that. What the fuck do you do? Because you're dressed like a fucking... You're dressed like someone that should climb a telephone pole.
I know you, and I know that what you enjoy most about your sci-fi...
Yeah.
That you can inhabit a world. It gives you some rules... It gives you enough rules for you to then imaginatively build that universe the rest of the way out in your head.
Yeah, 100%.
And think about consequences in this. And I think the first act of this film is so deliberately ambiguous
mm-hmm.
about where we are, when we are, why we are.
Yeah.
There's a almost sort of like a dark Wes Anderson quality to it, where people aren't speaking naturally.
No.
Everyone's speaking in little monologues and little meaningful sort of soliloquies, and it all feels very symbolic and very figurative,
mm-hmm.
but you've got absolutely no context as to what. Right?
Yes.
I can see that winding you up.
And it pissed me off a bit because I was trying to figure all of this out and I had ideas of different things. The fact that they kept referencing Carl Sagan and Carl Sagan's teachings and this, that, and the other made me think that A, it's a parallel universe because Carl Sagan's been dead for how many decades?
Many.
Many. His, the TV series that they reference and that they're watching in the movie has been remade by Neil deGrasse Tyson. So if it was a, if it was like a real day thing, it would be that cosmos would be referenced because people would have grown up with that. But then I started thinking maybe this is this universe, but in the 70s or in the 80s. But then you look at the cars and the architecture and the stuff that's going on. And I'm like, this is fucking annoying. Because they've smashed everything together and I don't know where I am or what I'm doing or what's happening or why the world is falling apart or what's happening.
But what I think is so perfect about it.
Yeah.
And the reason that first act has to be so ambiguous and so bleak is Carl Sagan, you've brought up a couple of times because you're a massive
one of my heroes,
right?
Yeah.
I don't think Carl Sagan is a particularly accomplished scientist if you look at his research papers and what he's invented, discovered, this, that, and the other.
Sure.
But where he is a world-class, best, one of the best of all time scientists is in his communication.
1,000%.
The communication of ideas that are not his, that existed in the world before, and no one gave a solitary fuck about because they were not communicated properly.
And no one had access to them.
No one had access to
this
them because they were communicated in fucking white papers and research
papers. Peer review papers that are published for doctors by doctors. Yeah. No
and
one else
written
got
in
looking.
Language for doctors by doctors.
You need two dictionaries to fucking read through one of those papers.
And he was the guy who managed to break things down and go, this is what we've discovered a couple of decades ago, a couple of thousand years ago. Regardless, I'm going to lay it out for you in a way that you understand so that you have some understanding of what I understand, right? And I would say Neil deGrasse Tyson or Brian Cox, who's the kind of modern day equivalents of...
Neil deGrasse Tyson got his start because of
Carl Sagan.
He invited him around for dinner once and just sat and had dinner with Carl Sagan and his wife and just chatted about the universe. And that was what inspired him to go on and carry on his studies. And then Carl Sagan helped him out monetary-wise with his studies and was just sort of like, you need to fucking, I'm going to nurture this because there's something in you that I saw in me.
Amazing.
And he had this whole philosophy of being sort of like, the common man needs to understand how beautiful math is, how beautiful the universe is.
Exactly.
And this is where the TV show came into it. So he's not the most accomplished astrophysicist
that's
ever
not.
Lived. He is the most beautiful person that has ever lived.
Right.
And is an example of humanity that will never die out.
And the reason I think the first act of this movie and Carl Sagan and science communication are so vital to this film is because it places you, that first act, in a fictional universe where no matter how accomplished you are at what you do, you feel the weight of not understanding.
Yeah, definitely.
So that the movie can then walk you through the stages of explaining to you, just like Carl Sagan does, and I feel like Mike Flanagan and Stephen King with this story and the direction of this story have done for human connection what Carl Sagan did for science.
Okay.
That everything's confusing to you, you don't know what's going on, you don't know who these people are, you're scared, you're worried, you're confused.
Sure.
It feels like everything is ending. And sure enough, everything will end.
Yeah.
This film will end, your life will end, the sun will die out. Let me walk you through why that's not such a bad thing.
Oh, 1,000%.
Is a beautiful, beautiful thing. I spoke to some listeners before this episode.
Yeah.
Just to kind of feel out how everyone was on about it. And one of the interesting points that came up from a listener was that maths can be art, but it is capable of lying because you can misrepresent the truth with, you know, cherry picking statistics or this kind of thing. And my rebuttal to that is that maths can tell a story, but it takes a human being to choose which bit of the story you get to want it to say.
Yeah, the math isn't omitting the information. The information is being omitted
by
whoever's
a human
telling
person,
the story.
Right?
Yeah.
Makes the humans are liars or storytellers.
Yeah.
Kind of storytelling and lying being two sides of the same coin. The maths is completely...
It's universal.
Universal.
Yeah.
There is some sad universal maths with this film that I think is beautiful and one of the best of the year and a real... triumph of storytelling. And the sadness is on its debut weekend it opened in over 1,100 screens in the US.
Yeah.
And it made $2 million.
Yeah.
You work in a cinema. How full were those screens?
It wasn't a long run.
No.
It was a couple weeks tops. Couple weeks, maybe three at a push. There was, I don't think there was a big rush for this one.
Mm.
It was a steady movie.
Yep.
Which was good. That sort of, it made me move for good. I think Tom Hiddleston was the only pull.
Yeah, 100%. Because how else do you market the film?
You don't. So the thing with the Tom Hiddleston thing as well, right? This whole, it was marketed as a Tom Hiddleston movie. I don't think this is a Tom Hiddleston movie.
It's absolutely not.
I think Tom Hiddleston's in the movie.
He is, yeah.
It's not his movie in the slightest. No. I think he's aware of that.
Yes.
And it's celebrated with everyone involved. So as I've just mentioned, the first act was confusing and annoying and a bit upsetting because I was trying to figure out what the fuck was going on. And then when you watch the rest of the movie, everything that you've just felt is perfectly represented
mm-hmm.
by the titular character of Chuck,
yeah.
who is just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Which is the best way to tell this story and the most gorgeous fuck you to me being a petty little bitch and being sort of like, well, what's the rule of this universe? I get it. Like, you know, fucking Dave from Late Night of the Devil, David.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name?
Dalmastian.
His Pornhub rant was fucking incredible.
Yeah,
brilliant. What's the world's coming to an end, the internet's dead and everyone's falling out of each other, no one's going to work, hospitals are empty, this, that and the other, people are killing themselves and they're taking Pornhub away. Just feels mean.
Just mean.
Which is fucking hilarious.
Hilarious.
Which is great. So all this is going on in the first act and it does this whole thing. It's such a gentle welcoming into the world of Chuck because it gives you all the context that you need to understand that exact universe that's happening within him, and you as you get more information, you get the realizations of why certain characters were playing certain things in the first act, and it is genuinely killer.
Yeah. Oh,
killer. It is fucking killer.
I want to point out some details that make this film, once you know what it's about and where it ends up, difficult on a rewatch, right? The movie that Marty's watching at home is Cover Girl.
Cover Girl.
Yeah. And it stars Gene Kelly and Rita Hayworth.
Mm-hmm.
The Shawshank Redemption was originally titled, as a novel, Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption.
Right.
Just a cute little Stephen King Easter egg, right? Oh, yeah. Rita Hayworth.
Yeah.
There's some others that genuinely make me a little bit teary.
A little bit weepy.
The boombox in the hospital.
Yeah.
That's next to his bed is the same one that the childhood dance class.
Oh, the teacher uses.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He's kept that. The car driven in the opening scenes, it belongs to his grandfather. And there's like cordless landline phones that just move across time because we're not seeing time or real objects. We're seeing his memory
of
his life. The expression that he shows on the billboard, thanks, Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
As that world starts to shut down, his expression changes as he's becoming more and more cognizant of what's happening.
Yeah.
And then as the stars blink out of existence and the last few memories that he has hold hands and welcome oblivion, what's the song that's playing?
I'm not sure.
It's the song that he and his grandmother used to dance to in the kitchen because that's his happiest. That's the song that's in his head as he... his lights go out.
Dance Hall Days?
Yeah.
Is that what's playing when the stars are going out? Is it?
Quietly on the Wind in the background.
Oh, okay. That's gorgeous.
It just ties the whole thing into That's really nice.
I love this.
What do you think the attic represents? And I ask you this, not because I want an answer, but because I'm going to tell you mine.
Okay. Then let me just speed this up. I don't know, Rob.
Okay, so yeah.
What is this?
I've got a quote from Flanagan.
Okay.
And he says, it represents the unknowable.
Right.
It tells you how and when you'll die. And that's a terrifying idea, but profoundly human. It's not about ghosts. It's about our desire to know the end of our story. So now let me ask you a genuine question.
Mm-hmm.
Would you open the door?
Yeah.
You would?
Yeah.
You'd see how, but not when, you're going to die.
Doesn't bother me.
No?
Doesn't bother me. I'm scared of death.
Right.
Like I am. I'm not scared of like dying. I'm scared of death, but not for myself. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, for the people you'll leave behind.
It's more the people I'll leave behind and the stuff that I'll miss, that's the only thing that's genuinely terrifying.
Never see Avatar 4.
Well, I mean, if I die before 2029, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just estimating.
Sound. I am getting headaches.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you would open it.
Yeah.
How do you think you're going to die?
Hopefully, I don't know, being hit by an F1 car whilst I'm the pit crew. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That's the best way to go.
Brad Pitt's driving.
Anyone's driving. It's just I'm the one in charge of brakes. And then on the next pit stop, I get mowed down by the car I failed to fix because I've lied my way into being a pit crew.
Okay, yeah.
That's number one. That's the number one way that I want to go.
Yeah.
I always think, like, not a fun way to go, but like a way that would make people go, I might not.
Mm.
You know Alton Towers, the theme park?
Yeah.
That we had? You know that ride, the Smiler?
I don't know it personally. Like, okay. I'm aware of a ride called
so
Smiler.
There's
I don't
a ride
know
called the
did.
Smiler, yeah, right? Yeah. And there's a woman who lost her leg on the Smiler. It was a big famous thing. She lost the leg on the Smiler when it malfunctioned and two cars crashed together.
I remember. Very easy weight loss plan.
Right. Now imagine going to like a family-friendly, like, petting zoo.
Yeah.
Where the biggest roller coaster is like, you know, when you go to the seaside and you get the caterpillar roller coaster.
There was one near me in a little, theme park in Devon called Flambards.
Oh, I know. I know what you're on about. Yeah.
And they had like a single loop.
Yeah.
With a dragon on front.
Yeah. 1,000%. Like, it's that. Or like at the West Midland Safari Park, I think it's a caterpillar that goes through an apple.
Mm-hmm.
Decapitated by the apple.
That'd be great.
Would be the way out.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because then people are like, you know, adrenaline junkies that are like, I'm going to go on Oblivion. And they're like, that motherfucker got decapitated on a caterpillar.
Mm.
I might not.
Nice.
I don't know why. I just think that'd be a fun way.
I'd quite like to spontaneously explode.
That'd be a good one.
I'd like to do it mid-conversation with somebody. Yeah. It's either an argument or it's a debate.
Yeah.
And I go, let me just stop you there. Have you considered?
And then
just bang.
Oh.
Just leave them wondering for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Was that his point?
I tell you what,
right?
Another great way to do it,
yeah,
would be to be at a campfire and someone's telling ghost stories, and you're like, "Listen, I've got the best ghost stories. Give me a second. I'm gonna be back in 2 seconds. Just let me grab some water."
Mm.
And you just walk into the lake and never come back.
Amazing,
the best ghost story that has
that
ever
would
existed.
Be incredible. That would be
because
incredible.
You would have genuinely just disappeared, and they're like, that would become the ghost story that no one would believe.
Mint.
You'd be.
So there's a million ways. There's literally a million ways to die in the West.
I'd love that.
Yeah.
Did you just quote a fucking Seth MacFarlane movie?
It was good. Because there was that show, A Million Ways to Die, and I've never seen it. So
there's a movie called A Million Ways to Die in the West by Seth MacFarlane.
Which is what I pivoted to when my brain.
Got you.
My brain went, I couldn't cash that check because I hadn't seen that TV show. So I just added in the West because I'd seen it.
Okay. Fair.
I think the point about the main character, young Chuck, opening the door, there's a really wonderful thing that he does. Elderly Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill plays his granddad, and he plays a fucking blinder in this movie. Some of the best acting I've seen from Mark Hamill in years. He's terrified. You know, it's the waiting that gets you. He's seen it. Chuck opens the door and he does. I originally wrote healthy denial, but it's different. It's not healthy denial. It's he accepts what's true. He sees how he's going to die and he accepts it without letting it change a single thing about what he then does.
Yeah, of course.
And I think there's a real thing that I've done in the past where I've accepted something and I've given it so much room and I'm like, oh well, yeah, you know, that is true about me, that is a flaw I have, or that is a thing I struggle with, and I then like let that dominate how I behave. Whereas what Chuck does is he doesn't deny what he's seen, he doesn't deny what's true, he just goes, yep, I get that, I'm aware of it, I'm going to keep it on the back burner, but I'm not going to let it change what I allow myself to enjoy or not. Which is a wildly different thing.
Because I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think if we were given more time with young Chuck immediately after seeing how he dies,
yeah,
I think there would be a moment of pause where he has to process what he's just seen.
100%.
There would be a breathing period. There would be like a breathing pause where he goes, oh, fuck.
Well, he's also quite like, lucky because
that
he
looked
dies,
and sounded like cancer.
He dies in a bed.
Sure.
With a banging wife next to him and a child, both of whom are sad. Whereas, like, his granddad sees himself alone having a heart attack at the bottom of the stairs in the house he's already in. There's a wildly different emotional context to both of those views, right?
Yeah.
If you look down there and you see your daughter dying in a violent car crash, that's going to fuck you up more than, like, oh, I'm surrounded by loved ones and I'm, you know.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Like, in the past, I've done similar things where, like, I'm trying to process stuff or I'm trying to come to terms with stuff and it takes a minute.
I guess it's a genuine question for you. Sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
You are now over 3 years sober.
Over four years sober.
Yeah. Incredible achievement.
Thank you.
Even more so because I know how useful alcohol was for you. It's not like you were an alcoholic who was just like, eh, it's nice, it's fun, I like it. Like, it was doing genuine work. It was supporting weight.
Yeah.
So for you to be now 4 years past it, I guess... there's that what I'm talking about with that kind of healthy denial is what you now do, which you didn't do before, is you previously said, once I have one drink, I can't stop drinking. So I'm going to let that dictate my entire life. Whereas now it's just a thing, you know.
Yeah.
And you live your life almost, at least externally,
right,
unaffected by it.
It's
you get joy, you live,
yeah,
you live healthily, you live fully,
yeah,
without kind of the burden of like, but I must avoid this. That's how it seems externally.
Yeah.
It seems like you've kind of accepted it and then gone, but I'm not going to let that run my life.
Thanks, man, for a start. That's
not at all.
Really nice. It's getting there. I had a moment the other day where... obviously, like, we sell alcohol at the cinema.
Yeah, of course.
And I opened one of the bottles to sell a bottle of alcohol to a customer, and it had sprayed on my arm, and the smell was fucking delectable.
Of course.
And you know, when you're sitting there, and you're just sort of like, God damn, and this guy is like, I've had such a long day, I cannot wait to do this. I tell you what, give me another one. You just chuck him in one cup, and then he takes a swig, and it's like, this is the best fucking thing. And I'm like, can you leave?
Yeah, right.
Just go and enjoy your film. Your child is next to you, and he wants to go watch Avatar. Fuck off.
This isn't what you want to hear, but it will be helpful to hear.
Mm.
I know for a fact, if you were to fall off the wagon and have a beer about 5 minutes after that first sip, I think you're at the point now where you would just be sadly underwhelmed. You'd get to that point and you'd go, okay, this isn't actually everything I dreamed it of being.
Yeah.
Because it's just not. Because fundamentally, you'd have that first half of the beer and you'd be like, eh.
You know what
it's
it is?
It's not the great panacea that I thought it was going to be.
It's not the beer itself and it's not the alcohol itself that I miss. It's what it facilitated.
Right.
It was the Dutch courage. It was the lack of caring about the social anxiety. It was the, now I genuinely don't give a fuck what people think.
Yeah.
Not because I'm healthily dealing with that thought in my head. It's because I'm so numb to everything and so careless to what everyone else in the current vicinity is feeling, thinking, whether they're comfortable or not. I just genuinely could not give less of a shit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, that's what it
was.
That's the thing that,
it enabled selfishness that is a lovely thing to be able to experience.
I mean, it was a built-in selfishness that took a while to sort. This is why it's taking so long to kind of get used to it.
Yeah.
So you are right. It would be underwhelming. The taste would be underwhelming. Like, the thing would be underwhelming. It's everything that comes with it.
Yeah.
The stuff that I was able to do, what in my mind, I gave credit to alcohol for. That's the
it's
stickiness.
That. Yeah. Yeah. It's that. And I think you... when I knew you, when you were newly sober, you were Chuck's granddad, living your life with knowledge and letting that knowledge run the rest of your life. And everything you were doing was kind of like, okay, I'm doing this and I'm doing this as a person who can't have a drink. Whereas now it feels a little bit more like, you know, that fact, it's in there, you've accepted it, but it's not running the show anymore. And I think that's a wonderful thing to do in a movie with an extended dance sequence by Tom Hiddleston playing to a drummer in the street.
Fucking mint.
And I also think that this might be, when I say this might be the perfect film, it's not only your perfect film, mm-hmm. and your definition of a perfect film quickly for a new listener is?
Someone who is the most qualified to tell that story at the time.
Right, telling that story
yeah.
because they've gone through something which is
yeah.
what the film depicts.
Ghostbusters. It's four mates trying to get something off the ground. That is exactly what the film right. is. That's what the film was when it was being made.
Right. And mine is, it sets you up, makes promises, then delivers on all those promises.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way, Anaconda
mm-hmm.
is as perfect a film to me as Interstellar. They just make different promises at the front.
Yeah, of course.
And they deliver equally on them. I think this is a rare film in that it achieves both of our criteria.
Interesting.
Thanks, Chuck poster is designed by the artist for a podcast called Kingcast. Do you know it?
I've heard it in passing.
Right, it's the Stephen King podcast.
Yeah.
Right? And that's relevant because one of the hosts, Scott Wampler,
mm-hmm.
He was also a managing editor of Birth Movies Death, and he was an instrumental contributor to Fangoria.
Oh, sweet, okay.
Right. Personal friend of Flanagan's.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a staple of the kind of online film community
yeah.
that we're part of, and died unexpectedly on May the 31st.
Fuck.
Happened a year ago from the promo of this movie.
Yeah.
Flanagan said, a year ago today, on the day it happened, I was in Austin. He was an Austin-based guy.
Right.
I was meant to have dinner with him and Eric Vesper, the co-host of the show.
Yeah.
We texted that morning to confirm the plans, and then that afternoon he was gone.
Fuck, man.
He's in the movie. He's in the crowd that are watching Chuck dance.
No way.
He was a close personal friend of Flanagan and his wife.
Yeah.
His wife, Flanagan's wife, plays the school teacher in this one. She's in all of his projects.
Oh, the Hippy Dippy one?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He talks okay. about Multitudes, the Walt Whitman
yeah,
quote.
Yeah, yeah.
So Scott Wampler was invited to set to kind of cover some behind the scenes and, mm-hmm. you know, they were close friends.
Yeah.
And yeah, he died during the making of this movie.
Shit,
so Mike Flanagan is making this movie whilst his close personal friend dies, which is why the film is dedicated to Scott Wampler. And that's who he was.
Yeah.
But for a filmmaker to be experiencing that loss of not only his friend, but all the things that his friend knew, and that thing that the movie brings in, that when someone goes, it's the loss of everything they remember. There's a phrase, when an old man dies, a library burns.
Right.
That sense of there is a perspective on the world that is unique to you
yeah.
because of what you have been through. And that sense of maths being... Well, I'll get into it when we get into what does it really mean. Which one of us is going to die first visiting the set of a filmmaker who we're close personal friends with? Because when you were having the lung op, we did discuss how I could flip that into a lucrative t-shirt business.
Yeah, I think...
Never forget Twin Towers, a dove, you holding a dove,
yeah.
topless.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know if that's true anymore because you've had your lung fixed.
It's such a tough question. Selfishly... I kind of hope it's me because then I don't have to live through it.
That's true.
Because if it's you and then I have to live through it, I ain't going to forgive you. Because
yeah.
that's a fucking nightmare. What, I just have to wake up every day and be like, yeah, my mate's dead. Yeah, sick.
And he was in an argument with somebody and he just spontaneously
asshole.
Exploded
yeah.
to make a point.
How dare you? I want you to be telling the ghost story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he
yeah.
wandered off into the water, right. never to be seen.
That'd be incredible.
Right.
Okay, that's actually so good.
I feel like you deal with it better than I would.
Oh, no.
100%.
No.
I feel like you're better put together for that than I am.
No.
I'm too soppy. I'm too soft. Rob, when was the last time you cried?
At that Spider-Man meme when I had a cry-y month. Do you remember?
Yeah, it was like August,
It was like August, yeah.
Okay. I don't think there's been a day...
Yeah. Post a relationship ending, I got really weepy.
You had like a week where you were sad.
Just all the time about yeah. random shit. Yeah, that was the last time.
Okay.
And then it turned off again.
Yeah. Mine doesn't turn off.
Yeah.
I just get sad about everything.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it should be you.
I got emotional at a donkey advert yesterday.
At the fucking donkey advert?
Dude, I wasn't even paying attention. I was just walking through the room and I just saw a sad donkey and was like... Do you know what I mean? It sorted my head out, man. It's odd.
Well, I mean, this must have made you a little bit weepy then.
Yeah, this fucked me. You being serious? But I messaged you being sort of like, this is just, it's the opposite of a feel-good film because it,
oh,
it
really? Built,
not in a bad way.
Right.
Nothing in what I'm saying is in a negative connotation whatsoever. Just structurally, it's the opposite of a feel-good
it's
film.
It's the end of a universe.
It's a boomerang.
Yeah.
I just clicked as well. The universe is ending and everyone is going back to their like first loves and getting their relationships back together and stuff like this.
Right.
He, when he was young, Chuck.
Yeah.
The dancing partner who he was like in love with.
Yeah.
So why did he sub out himself and his own memories?
How do you mean?
Because he subbed out his, it was, we were watching it from like the English teacher to the nurse, right?
Yeah.
So why wasn't it himself and his own memories?
Because he is the universe in Act 3.
Right.
In Act 3, which starts the film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're inside his brain, so it's the experience of his memories.
Yeah, but he's a collected. Physical presence in that because he has, like, obviously the marketing programs and shit, and I guess he's watching...
Yeah, he's watching the parts of his life.
Right.
They're all the memory. That's the memory of his teacher, the memory of his...
Yeah, but those guys, obviously, like, not being together... Because they were just both teachers and he's assigned them their own roles and this, that, and the other. So he's just taking his memories and playing out a story.
I think it's more that in his head,
right,
each memory of that person has their own full, complete life.
Right.
And whether or not that reflects what they were in the reality of his life or not doesn't really matter. That within you,
right,
the memory of everyone you have, they've got their own identities, their own lives going on, their own ways that you viewed them. He as a kid might have imagined them together.
Right.
And then that's just how they've been.
So he's just...
That's his brain shutting down one star at a time.
He's just watching the multitudes.
Yeah.
Nice.
Just revisiting his life. And then as his brain is no longer able to remember Mars, it goes out of the sky.
Yeah.
As his brain is no longer able to remember the little girl roller skating, she skates off. And then as it all comes down and all the stars in the sky, he loses the ability to remember them. The thing he's left with is the feeling of wanting to be with somebody, to connect with somebody. And the two memories that happen to be there are doing that because that's what he cares about.
That's
all
really
set
nice.
To the soundtrack of the song that he connected with his grandmother over.
See, I took it as well as each character in there representing a part of him that was shutting down at that point.
Ah,
so
right.
Matthew Lillard was the endless hopeful thing of being sort of like, that's not my job, that's but I'm trying hope. My hardest. Yeah. Is there anything I can help you with? Which is why I was thinking like immune system.
The teacher is his logical, rational brain.
Yes, exactly. The one that's about the math, the science.
That makes as much sense.
And then obviously the nurse would have been like the caring sort of persona, which is what my initial take was.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking, is he putting people from his past together as like reconciliation because of his memory of his first love, which was the dance partner?
Well, I think the film starts so figuratively and so symbolically that it
could
both
be
of
anything.
Us can be right.
Yeah.
Then the second act is less figurative, but I think it's still there a bit. I'm not convinced he is dancing for that long and dancing that well. It's a memory of him dancing with a stranger.
He's dead, Rob. I feel like we just let him have that one.
Right,
do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I think he was dancing that well, and I think he was dancing for that long. In fact, I think he was being modest and he danced longer and better.
I do feel for Tom Hiddleston having put the huge amount of work in that it will have taken to get that routine as good as it is.
Yeah.
For the film to have made $2 million on its opening weekend and no fucker see it.
I think this is one of those films that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I could not give less of a shit. It's too human to be dictated by numbers. I feel like I'm going to be the storyteller in this math, and I'm going to ignore a couple of the numbers.
I'm going to skew
a few of the
because
statistics.
It's an objectively beautiful thing, right?
It's not even objectively beautiful. It's objectively human.
Yeah,
and it's the oddest fucking thing to watch unfold in front of your eyes ever.
So what would you? We've got different takes on it, but what would you say Life of Chuck really means? What did you get from this? Because we're very different film watchers. We're very different humans. I say that we're basically the same human with minor differences that we obsess over.
just two sides of a mildly autistic coin.
It's not even that big a coin. It's a penny at best.
It's not valuable metal.
No,
it's a copper.
Yeah,
it's a copper.
We're not like an old 50p.
No,
where you could kill someone if you threw it hard enough.
No.
But yeah, we are two sides of a copper coin.
I feel like I came away from this film ridiculously hopeful and feeling more reassured in that whatever happens, whatever is going to happen, doesn't define the impact of my life or those around me. It's what I choose to interpret from the situations and what I can get out of life. It's also like weirdly fucking poignant about all the tiny details, the little moments that add up to something big. Dancing in the fucking street is not sort of like a life-changing act.
The world is not changed by
that. No one gives a shit
about
it.
Very little is changed by that. Some people were mildly entertained for a few minutes.
He walks back an hour later and it's darker, there's no drum kit, and no one cares.
Yeah.
But he had the time of his life.
Yeah.
And so did she.
Yeah.
And little sister really needed that.
Yeah.
It's just fucking gorgeous and hopeful. Doesn't matter how big or grandiose or how small or insignificant everything feels.
We've landed on the edge here because I think for like... Listeners, dear lovely listeners, I think this film, it's the grayness of life is very easy to become sort of directed by.
Yeah.
This film is about maths, which, come on, fucking maths. Yeah. And like lost talents, I used to be able to.
Yeah.
Dead loved ones, school stress, dance, social anxiety, cancer, dead Wi-Fi. Like everything in this movie is there's so much obstacle and mundanity and maths and everything from the movement of the stars to the dead Wi-Fi is maths. And it can be very easy, I do it all the time, to like look at life and just see the dry numbers.
Yeah.
The rent that's needed to be earned, the tax that's taken off, the subscription fee, the calorie intake, the like all of that. And kind of you can end up feeling like your life is dry and dull numbers, but all of those numbers, like the kind of coordinates of a dot to dot, are making this beautiful picture called you. And if you zoom out and remember that, sometimes you'll see, like, you'll see the numbers. You see the numbers, I just see the sum of all the numbers that your life is made up of sat in front of me. And that's like, I'm grateful that you've still got the calculator in your hand. Because that's a beautiful thing, objectively.
I love that.
That's really nice. The wider picture, once you zoom out, is how you're interacting with the other equations that you fucking walk by every day. Mike Flanagan says, this is a story about joy. The threat isn't death. The threat is forgetting what made life beautiful.
Fuck it, Al. Yeah.
Yeah. And okay. I think every act of this movie...
Okay.
At its core, is tied together by a thread of making connections with others. The third act is connecting with the people around you as everything is coming to its end. The second act is connecting with a stranger in the street for no reason other than just the joy of it. And then the first act is those first connections to your family and your loved ones and people at school. Every single act is about reaching out into the world and listening to the people around you and being heard and like communicating through your troubles. It's the key at the heart of like all the joy in this movie. And if anyone listening to this is thinking that you don't have that opportunity, I promise you, you're doing it right now. And we have a Discord room full of people just like you who are struggling to see the joy in the numbers of every day. And they would all, me and Ben included, love to meet you.
100%.
Get on board.
100%.
Come hang out with, come do some living with us.
Come show me your numbers.
Come show us your numbers. Show us what movies you fucking hate.
Yeah.
Because...
Show me your letterboxed.
There we go.
Show me your letterboxed.
Stick your dick through his letterboxed.
There you go.
Before we get to rating this movie, because I feel like we kind of know where that's going to go.
Everyone does.
I've got some comment corners.
Yeah.
But in the spirit of the movie...
Are these good ones?
These are comment corners about the film we're covering.
Okay, awesome. Let's
I've
do
managed
this.
To somehow do some timey-wimey bullshit.
Let's do it.
Martina got in touch on our Discord.
Okay.
And
hey,
said,
Martina.
She said, this film is the most loyal screen adaptation I've ever seen. Literally word by word in a lot of cases.
Oh.
The only truly original bit of the film is the teacher's monologue, which is where she broke down. There is a sense of levity throughout the film that is an absolute delight.
Yeah.
100% correct.
Gorgeous.
10 out of 10 comment.
Gorgeous.
Bradavial got in touch, said, loved it, but would maybe have enjoyed it more if I knew it was going there.
Right.
Meta commentary is one of my go-to genres, and I did expect something completely different. It's like you go in for the usual feel-good, nobody-will-remember-it movie, and you stumble on a 2001 Space Odyssey-level reflection about fiction and the human condition.
That's kind of it, yeah.
It's kind of accurate.
It's kind of bang on.
And again, brings me back to, they fucked the marketing of this movie the moment they decided to make it, because you can't advertise this film. The only way they could have done it, do you remember when The Matrix came out and they were like, they just did the What is the Matrix thing?
That's all you could do.
That's all you could do with that film.
If it was me, I would have just put thanks for the great 39 years and just had the billboards everywhere.
And spent hundreds of millions getting that out.
I would have just done billboards. Yeah. No explanation, no nothing, no release date, no nothing like that.
I wonder if they did.
I would have just done that.
I wonder if they did and it just didn't connect.
No, because in the theatre that I work in, we had a Panaflex up for like...
Oh, yeah, the blue
weeks.
Poster.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing it and going, oh, I'm kind of interested in that. And then, yeah, they should have just done the Thanks Chuck.
Yeah, but
everywhere.
They shouldn't have done it in cinemas. They should have just done it, like, random places. And I mean, like, random places.
Yeah.
Little towns in middle America.
Yeah.
No one gives a fuck about that. Probably would have done just as well.
Yeah.
In the theater.
And
run.
Been cheaper.
Yeah.
100%. 100%.
You send a screener out to, like, a handful of people, a few critics, and you get them on, like, the internet train 2 days before being like, there's a movie coming out
and no one knows
in
what
2 days
about. Yeah.
And it's fucking insane.
Oh.
The mystery of the billboards. That shit would have gone crazy.
That would have gone
insane.
Look
at this Stranger Things that's going on at the minute. Everyone's convinced there's a secret episode because the ending was so shit. Everyone is like, no, that can't be it. That can't be it. Here's all the evidence as to why. And then you watch an interview with the Duffer Brothers and they're like, I don't know what's going on. It seems like a really good series. You know, it's like, motherfucker, you wrote it.
You know you fucked up as a creative. When everybody begins believing that there has to be more.
There has to be something, because what you've done is so unforgivably
shit.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. They you've not lost the trust of the audience. They still love you. They're just convinced you're not finished yet. And you're like, oh shit, maybe we're not.
Yeah.
They're probably furiously writing right now and calling around everyone and be like, look, just 1 week. We just need you back for 1 week.
We can blag it. We can say that it wasn't the 7th or the 1st. We could just say it was the English way. It is the 1st or the 7th. We've got 6 months. Let's get somewhat going.
What are you going to rate Life of Chuck?
Fat 10, obviously.
Fat 10.
Fat 10.
Fat 10.
Straight away.
It was nice talking to a bunch of people that had seen the movie.
Yeah.
And if you were somebody who didn't see the movie, you fucked up. You fucked up.
But you can fix it.
Not now.
Yeah, you can. You can go watch it. It won't be as good. The impact won't be as strong, but it's still worthy. It's obviously still worthy. It's fucking gorgeous.
It is a gorgeous film.
Just need to go watch. Just go watch.
Go watch the movie.
Go
right.
Watch it.
That's us done.
Is that us?
That's the end of the show,
guys. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's been fucking incredible.
It has. We're going to hang out a little bit longer on Patreon.
Yeah.
Chat to one another. If you want to get involved with that, you know where to go.
Just jump in.
Just jump in. Anywhere on our socials has got the link, and it's roughly £1.50, and it's great.
It's fun.
Ben's now going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and feelings of The Life and Chuck into a concise Monday motivational pep talk to help you get through the week, because we know a lot of you listen on a Monday. And I'm just going to do what society tells everyone to do and just tell you to... consume.
I normally do something stupid here. I'm not going to. This is just from the film. Go live your life until your life runs out. You are wonderful. You deserve to be wonderful. And you contain multitudes.